Hello, and welcome to the Commonweal Policy Podcast. I'm Craig Dale. I'm the head of policy and research at Commonweal. Scotland is a quote unquote developed country, one of the richest in the world, in a world that promised an end to want and need. And yet, that promise has not been met, not globally, and not even in so-called developed countries. In Scotland today, one in four people live in food insecurity, not knowing if they'll make it to the end of the month, end of the week, or even to the end of the next day with a full stomach. This is unacceptable. And the Direct Action campaign group This Is Rigged is organising a day of protest in Glasgow this week to call attention to the problem. I'm joined today by Heather from This Is Rigged to talk about their march for Scran in Glasgow on the 18th of February. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Craig, for having me. I'm so delighted.
So first of all, who are This Is Rigged and what do you do?
So This Is Rigged is really first and foremost, it's a direct action group. So we act in sort of civil resistance campaigns is the best way to put it. We protest, we try to get attention to a cause, which is climate change. And currently we're focusing on the way that climate change is affecting everyday people through things like cost of living and rising costs of things like food because of crop failures across the globe. And more than anything, we're just focused on getting the attention of the people towards the fact that the system is rigged. It's rigged against us, it's rigged against you and me by people a lot more powerful than us.
Now, the group is probably best known for its actions against the oil sector, hence its name, This Is Rigged. And as you say, it's not the only thing that's rigged against us. So what else have you been trying to campaign around?
So right now, we're really focusing on food solidarity. Personally, I've been doing a lot with reaching out to food banks, which I also do in my professional work, separate from This Is Rigged. I've worked with food banks since I was 18, personally, and I can see the change in demand in them. And This Is Rigged is trying to focus on the fact that the climate crisis and our reliance on things like oil and gas is making it more expensive for everyday people. Take your Asda shop, your Morrison's shop, it's gone up, what, 20, 30% in the last year or 2 years. And we really just don't think it's appropriate. And we want to get people's attention around the link between climate and the cost of living and the effect on the everyday consumer. So right now, the main campaign is food solidarity, but it's connection to the climate, which was our focus before.
And I'm not going to go too deep into the weeds of the economics of it, but I was struck by the report from the ONS just today as we're recording this on the latest inflation figures, saying that, yes, a few food items have come down in price, especially cake, ironically enough, not that we're allowed to eat that either. But what is really driving cost increases is the price of electricity and gas. Something we should all remember when the banks come back and say, and this is a reason why you workers shouldn't expect another pay rise. So, yeah, you're right. What you're talking about is being borne out in the data right in front of us. So can you tell us about food insecurity in Scotland? What is the scale of it and who does it affect?
So on a personal level, as I said, I work in homelessness, and that's a very very important area to work in when food insecurity is getting worse. I work with people who rely on food banks day to day to survive. And personally, just since COVID, I noticed that more and more people, especially families, especially people with two incomes, those people are needing food banks, not just once a month, not just once in a blue moon when they have another expense, it's every week for staples so that they can afford other things that they also need to survive. As well as that, though, just as you're saying about the data, personally, I really take note of the fact that the rickets cases in Scotland are rising so much in the last few years, all over the UK, actually. And it's really accurate when article headlines call it a Victorian era disease. It's a disease from times where we didn't have a welfare state. That's when it was such a common disease to have. And sorry, I'm getting totally into a little sidetrack there. But for me, food insecurity in Scotland affects everyone I know. Everyone I know has been hit by the fact that their shopping week by week costs more money. But for me, what I really saw in my working life was the fact that people were earning more money than I did, sat behind the desk serving them. But the combination of having to pay to live there, as well as paying for their food, not having access to a decent amount of food banks locally, these people were earning the amount of money that policymakers would see as adequate or a decent wage to live on, and they're having to survive off charity and food banks and donations from random people in the community. And it's just undignified and not right. But more than anything we've seen in food banks, there's an image that comes to mind. I went to visit Glasgow Northeast Food Bank in Parkhead, and they have a old shipping container out the back of the church they work in. And that shipping container used to be used exclusively for tins of soup. And it used to be full all the time before COVID hit. And since COVID, it now sits completely empty. And it hasn't even been half full since COVID. And it's just that image of the fact that's thousands of tins of soup that could have fed so many people gone because so many more people now need to rely on these community organizations just to survive.
And you're also seeing it on the other side of things where people who maybe not are strictly in food insecurity at the moment, but they just don't have the slack left and not giving as much because they can't afford to.
Yeah, most food banks that I speak to have seen a drastic decrease in their donations. And then that combined with the fact that most of them have had their funding cut as well in the last few years means that the people nearby who the food banks rely on can no longer give any extra. But that also means that the people that rely on the food bank don't get what they need. And it's the fact that the only aspect the government really sees head on, and that is handing over money. There is no actual governmental organization or branch that deals with this aspect of the country right now, and it's really upsetting when you understand how many people are using this aspect of charity as it is in the country.
Why is this happening in supposedly a rich country?
It's funny you say that because the word that comes to mind for me is corruption, especially right now. And I find that so interesting because not even 10 years ago, when I was in high school and we learned about why certain countries suffer more than other more developed, in quotes, countries, we are told that one of those reasons is corruption alongside colonization. But now we're seeing in our own country that the main cause of suffering is that same corruption by politicians who are earning millions right now, or billions in some cases. And the average person can't afford a loaf of bread every week because of how expensive it's gotten. And for me, I think it's a combination of things to do with the climate crisis and COVID-19. And then recently, a lot of political things have shown us that our reliance on oil and gas has become far too expensive to afford, with the cost of living affecting home bills, everything like that. And it's a combination of things, but overall, it's the government, the people in charge, mishandling a domino line of crises that we've had in the last 5 years, multiple lifetimes worth of massive crises. And the government has just prioritized money over everything else. And it's now meant that so many things that we used to expect as staples of communities, like food banks, like school meals, are crumbling below us. And it's upsetting to see it as a young person, as someone who works in homelessness, because I have to do so much more work now just to survive and also to do my job adequately. But the people I voted for, the people I technically pay, are not doing the bare minimum of their jobs. And that's why so many people are suffering now.
It certainly speaks to a lack of resilience to my mind as well. I'm really reminded of a couple of years ago when we had the height of the shocks from the pandemic clashing against the shocks from Brexit, and it resulted in me walking into to my local supermarket and taking a photo of an entire aisle of empty shelves. Because the supply chain had broken down, and I sent it to some family members who lived in Germany, and it really hit them how bad things were getting in Britain, to the point that they remember the days of the Cold War and the days of shortages in in East, what was East Germany, in both prior to and post reunification. And they didn't think those days were possible again. And then their son-in-law is sending them photos of it happening.
It's distressing, but I also think it's very telling because there was a time when politically people would see images of empty shelves and associate it and tag it with something that's the polar opposite of the political conditions that have created the empty shelves now. And it just seems to me very ironic, I think, now that the thing that was touted as the thing we should fear has happened because of a lot of fear that I think was invoked politically over the last 5 years. No, I've 10 minimum years, sorry, but it's ironic. It's horribly ironic, I think.
So tell us about the March for Scran and what you're trying to do with all of this information.
The March for Scran is really exciting, because the last few weeks in the group, we've talked a lot about when you do work like this, it's very easy to come off as a very negative and pessimistic, only ever criticizing person. But the difficulty in that is when you do work like this, the core of what you're doing is that you hope that things can get better. And I think the March for Scran is a really good example of that hope because we're trying to use noise and excitement and people being excited for a change and using that for a protest, which I think will be really interesting to see. It's happening at 11 a.m. on Sunday the 18th in Garnet Hill Park. The main aim is we want to draw attention, we want to get people's attention, we want to get across how you can't ignore the things going on right now, and we want to help you not ignore it any longer. And it's going to be loud, it's going to be happy, there's going to be songs, there's going to be chants. But the March for Scran in general, we just want to point out to people that the cost of food is ridiculous. Scran should not be something we have to fight for. We should not be having to argue with people about paying an affordable price for the food we eat. And the March for Scran, we hope, is just a positive, lively way at 11 a.m. on Sunday the 18th at Garnet Hill Park of getting that across to people and getting people involved in this fight for our rights and our right to food. Food is a human right and hunger is a political choice.
I'm really glad there's going to be music. I've always said that a protest without music is improperly dressed.
Yeah,
So I'm glad to
exactly. It
hear
would
that.
be great.
But I hear what you're saying about that difference between campaigning against something and campaigning for something. This is something I wrote about several times over the last couple of years, that in my world of political lobbying and campaigning, whenever I'm fighting against something and I win, I have that crushing realization of, after all of that effort, all I've done is ensure that tomorrow is the same as today. I've campaigned against something, I've stopped something, and now nothing is happening. And that's not nearly as good a feeling as campaigning for something and winning, and now tomorrow is better than today. So, yeah.
Hopefully, that's
Yeah.
the
Yes. So, what demands are you making of the Scottish Government through this march and through your other activities around food?
So we've got two main demands this time around. The first one is we want the government and supermarkets to some degree to try and put caps on the prices of specific essential goods. We really want to focus on things like baby formula, because baby formula for one has went up almost a quarter in its price since before 2021. and it's food for a baby, and it's that idea that you can profit off of food for a baby, and you can increase that profit, make it more expensive when everything else for a baby is also getting more expensive. But also just things like bread and pasta, potato, the simple things that people actually need to survive. And on top of that, we also want the government to commit to funding and setting up and maintaining a community food hub for every 500 households in Scotland, to try and sort of find a way to work with that demand we've seen added on to food banks to try and take that pressure off individual organisations and make it more of a government body than anything else.
Tell us about that. This is one of the really exciting ideas that I've had coming out of your group recently, is that idea of a community food hub, a local place in every community. Can you tell us about what it could look like and what it's there to do and how it is perhaps distinct from the traditional idea of a food bank?
Yeah, I'm very excited about the food hubs personally. They would have to look different in every community. And that's why one of the main aspects of the food banks, the community hubs, sorry, is that the community hubs are meant to be managed by the community for the community, as in it's designed for and caters to the needs of the people it's around. And it's not just something that gets built and plopped somewhere and never used by the people around it. There's so many amazing community hubs and food banks and community pantries around Glasgow that do amazing work, but these cost of living and climate crises have shown us that having such a demand out of nowhere almost on these hubs can put them to breaking point. And we need the government to step in and ensure that these hubs actually stay and actually are able to feed people and do the job they set out to do. But as well as that, many of the community hubs around Glasgow are quite brick and mortar. We want the community food hubs to provide appropriate and adequate food for people. And that looks different for everyone. And we want the community hubs to respect that. As well as that, though, community hubs don't just need to be about food. They could also provide a warm space for people. Say you can't afford your electricity right now, where do you go? If there's a community food hub that's warm, populated, you can go there and have a cup of tea. That's a much better alternative to just sitting it out, which is what most people have to do right now. And as well as that, we just think, imagine you have a community food hub that your neighbours use and you use and the people across the road from you use. That inherently means that you're meeting the people you live around, which we don't really have an opportunity to do right now because of so many different things. But really, it's just a place for people to cook and eat and be around socially that can be a third space for people, especially when we're going through things that are making it much more expensive just to be alive in this country.
Yeah, and that destigmatization of the idea is one of the powerful aspects of it for me. This is not a place for the poor and desperate, quote, very much quote unquote there, but it is a place for everyone, run by the entire community, where everyone is welcome. Often liken it to the idea of a library. You're going to a library and getting a free book isn't a form of charity, and no one expects it to be that. This is a community asset paid for by the entire community and owned by the entire community for the entire community. Why not the same idea for food?
I think using a library is such a good analogy, especially because I loved libraries when I was younger. Just for one, they're an amazing space when you're a little kid, for one, and when you just need a space to go urgently. But more than anything, with a library, if people tried to float the idea of a library now, we would get inundated with the, but people would just take the books and not bring them back, and they wouldn't respect the honour system. But you go into any library and the shelves are full. People bring back the books and people respect the honour system because they understand if I don't respect this, I won't have it anymore. And it's that idea that we've forgotten that people can actually respect things that serve them. I think maybe just in the last 10 years, people haven't really been given things that serve them. So they haven't been very respectful of them, which you can't. That's very understandable. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I hadn't thought about it that way. And I've been active in campaigning for other communal resource hubs like tool libraries. There's been a couple of policy podcasts on that topic. I'll see if I can stick a link to one in the show. I've got to get the self-promotion in somehow. But yeah, that idea that if people are involved in a service, if it's not just being dropped in from above and then pulled away when the money runs out, if people are involved in growing an asset for and from their community, there is that level of respect there and trust.
Absolutely.
So what else will be happening at the march, and how can people get involved?
The best way to get involved would be to be there at 11 a.m. on Sunday, the 18th of February at Garnet Hill Park. I'm really excited for it. It's going to be amazing. I would say if you have something that makes noise, like a pot or a pan or an instrument you can play, bring them along. They are encouraged more than anything. And I think if anything is to be expected, it makes me think of some more old school protests that are much more staples now and happen much more routinely, that were about making noise and about having fun to an extent in spite of the difficult circumstance you lived in, to prove that there is hope. And I'm delighted at the fact that it's going to be so loud and so exciting. And I just think it's going to be a very positive atmosphere for people. So yeah, again, 11 a.m. Garnet Hill Park, Sunday on the 18th of February. It'll be great. Come along.
Unfortunately, I have another appointment that morning, so I'm very unlikely to be able to bring my tuba along. But
No, that
who
would have been
knows?
great.
Well, Heather, thank you for that chat, and thank you for letting us know what's going on. There's been great timing for all of us, including for the podcast, because this year my theme for the podcast has been Activate. I want to see people get involved in communities. I want to see people get involved in anything that creates political change. So if anyone out there is involved in another project, could be similar to this, could be something completely different, but something that is there to create change and you're active in doing that, give me a shout, let me know. I'll get you on the show and you can talk about it. And I hope a few of my listeners make it along to the March for Scran on Sunday.
Yeah, thank you so much, Craig. Me too.
And I'd just like to end the show by reminding all of my listeners that Commonweal as an organisation is entirely funded by our donors and supporters, who give us an average of about £10 a month. We don't get government money. We don't have corporate sponsors. We don't even have adverts on our website. So if you're able to help us with our policies, our campaigns, and this podcast, then please put the donate link in the description of the show. Thanks once again to my guest. Thanks to all of my listeners. And I'll speak to you again next week.